there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was built originally to train alpine skiers in the Army.
Oh.
The Army had a alpine division or whatever, and they used, that's what that was built for. And then it developed a recreation area for this Army and Navy boys. And it was a fine one, dandy.
It was a gray big building with huge stone fireplaces in each end. We used to have Red Cross parties up there during the war. That was a nice place to have them.
Because the living room was bigger than this whole house.
Wow.
Big high ceilings. And then they started to abandon it, and they went all to pieces, and finally they went up there and burned it down. Now they're building another one.
Uh-huh. I imagine it will not be as big and elaborate, though.
I'm sure it won't be. How many years did you commercial fish then?
I fished salmon 2 years, and I fished halibut 1 year. So I guess three. And I worked for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service 1 year.
What were you doing?
Well, we had a patrol boat called the Eider. In fact, that newspaper I just noticed will mention the Eider when it was sunk.
Oh.
On its way to south. Anyway, the Eider was a schooner built in New Bedford, probably, as a sailing ship, and had been converted to diesel, but we still had the sails aboard. And it was used as a patrol boat on Kodiak Island to patrol fish traps. We had lots of fish traps on Kodiak Island.
Mm-hmm.
And we only had one officer in Kodiak in those days, worked the Fish and Wildlife Service in this patrol boat. I worked on that boat. And we inspected all the traps, see if they were closed on the weekends. We tried to keep the fishermen out of the creeks, it was robbing creeks, and so on. See, we were a territory, not a state.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all federal laws. And I was a hunter. I always took my rifle ashore and protected them from Kodiak Bear.
You were also the cook.
We had a job, but it was probably no one else ever had done that. We made a salmon survey that fall of every salmon stream on Kodiak and Afognak Island, walked up the streams to see how many salmon were there and whether they had a good view. From salt water to as far as salmon could swim. And we saw a lot of bear. The bear was on all the creeks, you see.
Uh-huh.
That was quite an experience.
Well, so, they do it now with airplanes, fly over and estimate.
They do. I worked for Fish and Game one summer, and we walked them a little bit, but we only checked small segments, and it wasn't near all of them. I think it was seven rivers or something like that.
Well, we walked them all.
Yeah, that would be really something to do.
Some of them, the fish go up a long ways. Yep. And I packed the rifle.
Does that mean you were in front or in the rear?
I got quite a lot of pictures of that. I took that summer, the Eider and bear, and fish, and traps. It's a big industry, a lot of them. the skipper of that boat, his name was Scarborough, Captain Scarborough. And he wasn't too old a man. I would say he was in his 40s. And he was a good skipper. You see, in those days, we didn't have any navigation instruments except a compass and a pocket watch.
Huh.
That's the only thing you had, coastal waters, and a memory. And some charts, but not all of the coastline had been charted, and some of it wasn't very accurate. There'd just be a great big space where there wasn't a chart. And as the war got started, they enlisted Scarborough, Captain Scarborough, as a, let's see, what did he call him? Well, he was in charge of the convoy, the convoy captain, I guess. The convoys from Seattle to Dutch Harbor. You get a whole convoy together and have to have someone look after the navigation, and he was it. And then he became port captain, this port of Seattle. And the first flat top that ever came to Seattle, port of Seattle, big aircraft carrier, they sent him out as the pilot to bring it in. So they took him out on a tugboat, and he'd climb up the ladder and went up in the pilot house. And he was a flat top, you know, as long as 3 football fields. And all he's got is a whistle, and he whistles, and the tugboats do this and they do that, and pull and push and go up through and docked into the Navy Yard. And the admiral, who was in charge of this flat top, sat back in his cabin while Scarborough was doing this. So after they got this flat top, this is a true story now, when the flat top was all tied up, well, the admiral asked George Scarborough back to have a drink and a cigar. The admiral said, you know, that was a marvelous job. He said, I couldn't have done that. I wouldn't have even attempted to bring this ship in through here. How many times have you done this before? And George, this is the first time.
As he picked the admiral up off the floor.
Well, he says, are you an Annapolis graduate? He said, no, I never went through third grade.
Oh.
Well, what in the world are you doing, port captain in Seattle? Well, George says, I've been captain of boats since I was 16 years old. I never missed a season. And I can draw you a chart of the coastline of Alaska from Seattle to Dutch Harbor that you can navigate with. And the admiral says, I apologize. I apologize. He was a great guy. But he sure was a good skipper. Just amazing how he could keep all this in his head, you know. And he knew the weather, and he knew the tides, and he just was marvelous. That was a fun summer. We didn't have any refrigeration, and we couldn't go to the grocery store and get groceries. So we just had canned stuff. Butter came in
cakes.
Cakes
of salt
water.
Cakes.
Huh.
So to get fresh eggs, we got seagull eggs.
Oh.
And on Noisy Islands, the seagulls nest in the cliffs, and we climb up on the cliffs to get the seagull eggs. And the seagull egg is bigger than the chicken egg.
Mm-hmm.
They're just as good or better. But because they're nesting, you got to know which ones to get, because some of them might be low, you see.
Right.
So you only take the eggs out of a nest that there's two in, because they that means they're still laying. When they get 3 eggs and they're set on them.
Mm.
So if the nest has got 1 or 2 eggs, that you take. had not hit the three. And we'd gather a whole washtub full. Then, to give them a further test, you put them in water. And the good ones, I forget, either float or sink. I don't know which way, but that's how you... And then the rest were all good. So you'd get a whole washtub full of eggs in a little while. So we ate lots of fish, seal liver, seagull eggs. We'd get cake, bread at the canneries. Had a good time that summer.
How many years before you opened the store?
Oh, in the middle 40s.
Oh.
Somewhere in there. Long time ago.
Didn't look a bit like it does now. It was in an old skid shack.
Oh.
Down below where... Well, right about where the store is now, the far end of it. And he was in lumber first.
I was in the store this morning. They had 3 or 4 computers going, was planning all the paperwork they had. I said, hell, I can remember when we used to do our bookkeeping on a shingle.
Was your store wiped out by the tsunami then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a lumber yard. The first
building we built was across the street where the mirror was.
Oh, yeah.
Downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And the lumber yard was in the area below where the present store is. Once you lose 1 million feet of lumber in the tsunami. When we rebuilt, we built the store down there, but went into hardware.
I see.
We had some hardware with our lumber yard, you know, things like door hinges and so on. But we went exclusively into hardware and didn't handle lumber anymore at all, except for our own use. Isn't that right?
Was Kodiak growing very fast after the war?
Well, at a period of time when it didn't do anything.
Mm.
There was lots of houses that weren't rented and fell down. The population, people went outside. Yeah, for quite a few years it didn't grow any. Let's see, what started it growing? King crab fishery, I guess, was the first thing. When they discovered king crab, then they started building canneries. They didn't have any canneries in town up to that point. Had one, Frank McConaughey.
Yeah, down on the dock.
And that was originally, it was a clam cannery. But it was pretty quiet for a good many years. And they discovered king crab, developed king crab.
And they built the coal storage for halibut.
Yes.
I don't remember the dates, any of them.
Yeah, that's what happened. But really, the man that started the king crab industry was those brothers in Raspberry Straits. They built the first king crab plant and experimented with king crab. Wakefield.
Yeah.
Wakefield Fisheries. And then they got wiped out with the tidal wave, and then they built a cannery at Port Lyons, and the natives wouldn't work, and they lost that. But they're the ones that really experimented and found up the king crab, which are Howard Wakefield and his two brothers.
So salmon wasn't a big industry in Kodiak then?
Pardon?
Salmon was the only industry Kodiak had up until this time. It was a summer you work, winter you live off your charge account. When you get the end of a salmon season, you got all your money and paid off all your bills and started again.
There was only one salmon cannery in Kodiak.
Huh.
That was a small one. The rest was all the way around the island. There were about, I'm just guessing, 20, 25 canneries around Kodiak Island. There are none of them, maybe one or two of them is operating today is all.
Huh.
But they had lots of canneries and lots of traps. But they moved to town.
Well, of course, your fishermen fished all around the island, too, from town.
Yeah, fishermen fished around there. But only in the summertime. Well, we had a halibut fishery, but there were not many halibut. There were not many Kodiak halibut fishermen. They came from southeastern.
Yeah, and the processing plant was up in Port William, so the money never came to Kodiak.
Huh.
Until they built their own coal storage down along the spit there. The B&C, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What became the B&C? I don't think it was B&C when it started, but...
Yeah, it all started after 64.
Wait, let's see, what year was the tsunami?
64.
That was 64. So it was afterwards.
Then it started growing, and also the ferry came in. A lot of people came to Kodiak by ferry who wouldn't fly.
Uh-huh.
Because of the difference in price, of course.
Right.
When I was in school, I had a history professor who said, dates were immaterial. He didn't care if we remembered dates. So I never learned to memorize dates. What he wanted us to know was what was going on all over the world at this time.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Coincidental with what we were studying. So that how it all fit together. Which I think was an excellent way to teach it.
Yeah.
but if you could tell him that in France, the French Revolution was going on, and in China, this was happening, and South America was just beginning to do that. That was great by him. But
no, sometime you could write a story of the history of the cattle industry in Kodiak Island, and that would be very interesting.
That would be interesting.
Start to finish. It's finished now, but it was quite a thriving industry at one time. The first people in the cattle industry were real cattlemen, honest to goodness cowboys. They'd lay their life down for a cow anytime.
Huh.
They were great men. But the second generation didn't take over. So now there's not much left in the beef industry. But there was 1,000 head of cattle on Narrow Cape at one time. Joe Zentner had...
That was Sid Olds.
400 or 500. Tom Felton had 300 or 400. And they were all good cows, good stock. Better than average that you find in the States.
Huh.
They were good ones. And they took good care of them. They took excellent care of them. Cut hay all summer. Made big haystacks, fed them in the winter, fed the calves.
Were there many problems with the bears?
Lots of them. You bet.
They were all good bear hunters, too.
But I can remember when we didn't have a bear refuge. And it was open for homesteading all the way around Kodiak Island. A mile strip, a mile deep, all around Kodiak Island. And you could set up a homestead, go do whatever you wanted to. And people got a little bit interested in Kodiak bear. They were different, and they did well. So we had a big meeting in the fall of 1939, probably in September, and there was probably 30 people there. Charlie Matson was there. He was the first and greatest guide in all of Alaska. And people from the BLM was there. And we discussed the problem of the bear, the cattle, and the bear hunters. And then people had some good ideas. They said, well, let's draw a line to the north end of the island and we'll have that bear. That'll be the bear refuge. We'll close that mile strip because it really isn't fit for farming or for agriculture. But this end of the island is good grazing land, and we'll have this grazing land, so we'll draw a line right through. Cattle and grazing on this side, bear refuge that side. Everyone agreed. It made sense to them. Mm-hmm. So cattlemen got their leases, raised cattle. Guides, so there was 25 or 30 guides, made a living guiding hunters from Kodiak Island. They made good money. The bear came over and killed a cow, the ranchers would shoot the bear. Then the guides forgot about this arrangement. They didn't want the ranchers shooting a bear. They forgot about this arrangement, that this wasn't bear country, this was cattle country. Well, as long as there was strong brotherhood of cattlemen, they could take care of their politics. They just killed the bear. They never went on the other side of the line. They never bothered the bear hunters. And there were lots of bear for the guides, and there wasn't. And they, when the bear came in the cattle country, they killed them. Mm-hmm. But the animal lovers and the graves came pretty. And so today there's bear everywhere, and there's no cattle, and that's the end of it. That's how it happened, but they forgot that the agreement that they had. If you go out here today and shoot a bear that's killing a cow, if these people of fish and game would try and arrest you. But they didn't years ago.
No, in fact, some of them even helped.
Yeah. And there's more bear on Kodiak Island now than there's ever been.
Yeah, I know.
Ever been. And they're a big bear and they're a good bear. There are lots of them. No shortage of bear. The feds out here don't like to admit that, but there are lots of bear. You see, the reason why there is bear, the states manage them.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it's a fact that the federal government is a complete and dismal failure in every instance where they ever tried to manage fish and game.
Mm.
And no one can dispute that. They just can't manage game, and never have. But the state has managed the game on Kodiak Island for years, and they managed the guides, and it's been pretty successful. Here's an example of why it's not successful. Look at this Marine Mammal Act. They start protecting the seal, they're almost extinct. They don't know why. Sea lion, same thing. Hello? Yes, who? I guess they don't want to talk. Same thing with sea lion. We had more sea lion than know what to do with us, so the feds started managing them, and there ain't any anymore. They're just terrible. I don't have any faith in them at all.
Then, of course, they make a bear refuge and hand out all the land to the Native Claims Act, and then don't know what to do about that. They want the bear kept there, and the natives have got to use their land.
Right. Right.
And in a large way, you can't blame the natives. If you, this is the land you've got to work on, you're going to have to use it.
Right.
You're going to make a living. but they just aren't compatible.
Will you be sure and get those papers back to me sometime?
I will. No, I won't.
I think you'll find them very interesting.
Yes, definitely.
A lot of that will dovetail that in with what we've telling you and what you read in that Thousand Mile War.
Uh-huh.
Required to accept any one who wished to attend as a member if they had a membership in any church, regardless of whether it was a Baptist church or a Methodist church or a, in other words, you didn't have to go back and be dunked instead of sprinkled to attend the churches, whatever your original church had done.
That's George Scarborough there.
Oh.
Skipper. And there's the Eider. And there's the Mr. Rainbow Trout.
Yes, sir.
What doesn't it look like?
Boy, he looks very young in this picture.
Him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's George. That's me.
Okay.
That's me.
Oh, my goodness.
Where do you live here?
Out Manashka Bay area.
I thought that's what you...
I thought it was a picture of us getting seagull eggs somewhere that summer. There's a bear that charged us on a stream survey.
Oh, so you had to kill it, huh?
And that's Mom, first year we was married.
Oh!
No, I guess that's... I don't know where that picture was, the seagull, getting seagull eggs. That was an interesting picture. You know, pictures fade if you put them in a black album.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, you should never use black, and this is a perfect example of what happens. That's the first house we lived in Kodiak.
Oh, my.
When you worked for the Fish and Game, where did you, what part of the island did you see?
I saw a lot of a fog neck.
Oh, did you?
Uh-huh. And then on this side of the island down to Old Harbor, and then on the other side, clear down to 7 Mile Beach.
Mm-hmm. Used to be gold mines there.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Sure. They used to mine gold there. I was looking, there is a picture, it's not very good. So the first Navy planes ever came to Kodiak.
Oh.
Anchored there. And I was telling you, that's on the 4th of July, 1939. Well, I've got a couple of them blown up somewhere. Big picture shows that.
That's a PBY, right?
Mm-hmm. There were three of them. Yep. Well, you can see I didn't take very good care of my pictures, but these are all taken that summer.
Did you live in Alaska before coming to Kodiak?
No, I came direct from New York State.
Oh.
New York State. In the mountains, up in the north part. can't show you a seagull hunting. That's what I was going to show you, because I lost it. I've lost it. Okay, well, anything else I can tell you?
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot. But I don't want to, you know, take up too much of your time. What you've told me is more than enough for my assignment, that's for sure.
You're going to have to get some snow plow and dig her up. She's disappearing out there.
Oh, no.
No, I think you can do it with a broom.
It's just coming down steady, isn't it?
It is, heavy.
Biggest blizzard I ever remember Kodiak having was probably 30 years ago. We didn't have this house, but we had the hangar down there.
Oh.
I think it was on Thanksgiving Day. We came out and had our Thanksgiving there. And about this time of day, it started snowing. And it really got right out and started snowing. So I remember we said, maybe we better go home. So we buttoned the thing up, and on our way to town, we stopped another place I've got, and we put the snowplow on the pickup. I took Mom home, and I went down, and I started plowing the parking lot in front of the store. And it snowed so hard that I worked all night long.
Oh.
And when it finally stopped, 8 o'clock the next morning, I had the only parking lot in Kodiak, just slicks a whistle. But it must have snowed 2 feet.
Wow.
Everyone else was absolutely plugged. But, boy, I was in good shape. I was lucky I had a gas tank full of gas, you see. And so when the storm finally stopped, I had a good parking lot. That was a big storm. Well, how long are you going to stay in Kodiak?
Well, I'm not sure. I want to go on to study at either Anchorage or Fairbanks, and so I'll probably be leaving it in a year or so.
You can go to another school where you get more.
Yeah, I can get a higher degree.
She Fairbanks can only get is fine. 2 years here.
Is it?
That's an associate degree, and she wants to teach.
Mm-hmm.
She's got to have the whole thing. Maybe she'll come back and teach here.
I sure like Kodiak. It's really nice. I really like being here. See,
our boy went to Fairbanks for his 2 years.
Oh, really?
We didn't have a community college then.
Uh-huh.
He said probably it was his thought that it was really a better place to go than big colleges the first 2 years. Because actually, in Fairbanks, the professors taught the courses.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to Stanford, they get the best professors in the world, but they just have some postgraduate doing the teaching. He's back in an experiment or something.
You may never even meet him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he went to Gonzaga, and he had the same good experience there. He thought Gonzaga was wonderful.
Yeah.
Took a tremendous interest in its students and what they needed and bringing them along and helping them out. If you came from a place like Alaska to the big city, they bothered about how you adjusted.
And yeah, that's really nice because most universities, you know, you're just kind of a number.
And then he went to Stanford post-grad and didn't like it at all, ever get master's.
One of his favorite stories was he was studying in one of the big, I suppose, law of some kind in Stanford. And he wore He wore a pair of these fisherman's deck slippers. You've seen these deck the fisherman wear to class one day. And the professor stopped right in the middle of the class and poked fun at him about them damn shoes he had on. So Dickie got to. Let me just tell you a little bit about those slippers. They went through the tidal witness, 64 tidal wave in Kodiak, Alaska. He told a little story about a tidal wave. Then he said, one summer those slippers...
Fairbanks flood.
Went through the... See that red paint on there? He said, that's from the Fairbanks flood. And he told a little story about the Fairbanks flood. And he said, if you look very carefully, you'll see there's quite a few fish scales on those slippers. He said, that's when those slippers on a cannery tender in Kodiak Island in such and such a year. He gilded for 4 years. And then he was on a cannery tender for a year. So we get telling stories about this, and finally, professor says, I give up. If I had a pair of slippers like them, I'd wear them to bed. I thought that was marvelous. Yeah.
The professor turned out to be a human being after all.
But them slippers have been a long ways. They've been up and down the highway 2 or 3 times.
Oh, when he was in Gonzaga, he came home for holidays in his truck up the highway and across the ferry.
Oh, wow.
All the Alaska kids did that. They'd get together a bunch of them and drive 24 hours a day, taking turns driving.
Wow. They still do that some, but I don't think you drive 24 hours a day.
Well, to get home and have a Christmas holiday and get back, you almost had to.
Yeah.
You couldn't take your time coming up and down if you were going down to school in the fall or coming back in the spring. Fine. They'd take their time and enjoy it. Because they could allow the time, but when you had only 10 days, say, for Christmas, if you took 3 out on each side, there wasn't anything left.
Yeah.
Well, if it doesn't turn to rain, it'll be kind of fun. If it turns to rain, it'll be a mess.
Yes.
Well, what? How many courses are you taking over here?
I have 15 credits. Let's see, how many classes is that? Four or five.
Pretty, pretty heavy schedule.
Yeah, it is. Keeps me busy.
You get pretty good teachers?
Yeah, they are very good teachers.
There's lots of people go to school there?
Well, there's a lot of part-time students, not a lot of full-time students. They have the most right now that they've ever had, and I think it's 18 or something, full-time students, which is over 12 hours, so that's over 4 classes.
I was wondering if the children of the community would take advantage of this.
There's a few high school students, but I think most of them actually leave the community.
Well, that's a wonderful thing. You know, they'll teach you anything you want to learn there. Even Barbara, she learned how to decorate a cake.
Yeah, he thought that was a silly thing to go to school for until she made him a birthday cake. Then he changed his mind.
Oh. Yeah, there's a lot of fun things down there, as well as the... very scholastic classes.
Yes. Well, she also finished her teaching degree there.
Oh, really?
To get her Alaska license. She didn't go for her Alaska license when she first came up here. And she only had one class that she had to do, but they weren't offering it in the community college. So she let it go and thought they would, and then they got to be 2 classes, and then I think it got to be 3 classes, and then finally there were a number of them. They got together and the college did get someone in to teach the classes, and one class she had to go to Anchorage and stay and take. Huh. But of course by this time she had a family.
Right.
And it wasn't real easy to go away. But if she'd raised Cain that first year, she probably could have made arrangements to take that one class and had it done with. Because sometimes this college can arrange for you to study under someone who actually is in Anchorage, but sends all the classes and comes down at intervals. And goes over things and checks on procedures and things.
Yeah, you can also take correspondence courses through either Anchorage or Fairbanks where you, I don't think you ever do actually see the professor. You just talk to him on the telephone and they mail you your tests and you mail them back. And I've thought about doing some of that, especially if I'm not able to go to school next year at Anchorage or Fairbanks, to do some correspondence work to keep on working towards the degree.
We just hired a little gal to be secretary in our Red Cross office.
Sherry McDonald.
Yeah.
She's in one of my classes, two of my classes.
And she got accepted to the Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to leave us in the spring.
Yeah.
Which breaks her heart because she's a pretty darn good secretary.
Is she? That's good. That's good. She's real bright. Real bright and seems to work really well with people.
What's she studying for?
She's studying education. The same as me. Uh-huh. She wants to be an English teacher.
I didn't know what she was studying for. I knew she was studying at the college. That's why I mentioned her. I thought you might know her.
Yeah.
And, but she's a good little typist and very helpful, very good with people. And during this disaster, she stayed overtime for us and did extra work. Everybody was very impressed with Sherry.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like something she would do. Yeah. I really like her. I've done some work with her in small groups in a couple of the classes, and she's a lot of fun to work with.
I bet.
Yeah. Well, I should probably get back to the college. Sometimes I feel like it's home. I spend so many hours there a day anymore.